Welcome to another episode of Book Echoes, the podcast on making great books while making creative lives that work for us. I'm your host, author Connie B. Dowell. And as I am talking to you guys, as this episode releases, we are T-minus 20 days until the release of my next cozy mystery, The Body in the Bookmobile. So it's getting pretty busy around here, but I'm really excited. This has been a fun project to work on. I used a lot of my personal experience as a library outreach assistant, which is sort of 21st century term for a bookmobile driver, when I was a graduate student. And launching this new series and having fun with these new characters and all of the quirky little places I get to make up, a hodgepodge of stuff that just popped into my head and some real stuff that I've seen in a variety of fun, quirky little places over the years. So it's been lots of fun, but it is lots of work and there's still lots more to be done before everything releases on the 20th and or the 25th rather. That's when it comes out, the 25th. And before the final files, everything is finalized on the 21st. So I am wrapping up my last editing project that I am taking before the book releases, so I can just focus full time the next couple weeks on making sure everything is perfect and out the door. So that is what's going on here in my writing. Now, today I have for you guys an interview with children's author Trina Wetzel. And Trina has done some interesting stuff. She has done some things that self-published children's authors, and she is self-published, children's authors don't normally do, like printing board books or creating a tie-in toy so that she can package and sell her books as, you know, a book and the toy that goes with it that makes a wonderful birthday present or a Christmas present for a child. So she's really taken a page from traditional publishers and their packaging and their production and applied that to her own business. So this is a great listen for those who are looking into publishing children's books, but also those who are looking maybe to create tie-in products that go along with their books. Trina also imparts an important warning that we go into in more detail in the episode, but I'm just going to clarify a few things here. When she first purchased ISBNs, it looks like she went through a company that was a partner company of Bowker. And Bowker is the one and only ISBN issuer for the United States. Eventually everyone who's publishing in the United States, every United States citizen that gets ISBN numbers goes through Bowker. But there are partner companies that work with them and they get their ISBNs from Bowker and I suppose resell them. The one that she went through, she clarifies in the episode that she purchased the wrong package and the numbers she got when she tried to have her books in libraries and bookstores, she ran into a problem. And it seems like she either didn't get correct ISBNs, she didn't get real ISBNs, or the ISBNs were registered to that partner company and not to her. And then they had some trouble looking it up for that reason. There is a wealth of pitfalls you can go into with choosing your ISBN numbers. And most self-publishers do one of two things. Either they use print-on-demand services that can issue them a free ISBN number, create space, who is now known as KDP Print, will do that. You don't have to buy an ISBN number to publish through KDP Print. You can choose to use one of their free numbers. The printer has gotten these numbers from Belker. But that means that those numbers are registered to them. They are on record as the publisher of record for that book. The other thing, and this is something that I personally recommend that self-publishers do, is to buy ISBN numbers themselves directly from Belker. So you go to Belker.com, that is Belker's main website, or myidentifiers.com, that's where you'll have to go eventually, because that is Belker's management site for ISBN numbers, where you can go in and assign an ISBN number to a book and put in all of your details. And if you do that, then whatever you've listed as your publishing company name, whether it's your name or a company name, your company, that will be listed as the publisher of record, because you own those ISBNs. That's the usual problem that people get into, is that they would want to be listed for their ISBN. They want to be the publisher of record, and then they can't. And when they decide they want to be in bookstores, now here's where it gets tricky, when they want to be in bookstores, and bookstores do not like to, they don't typically like to stock books that were printed by KDP Print. So you need to go through a different printer distributor, most commonly Ingram. And when you go to upload your book, if you try to use an ISBN number assigned to you by CreateSpace, it's not going to accept. You will have to go and purchase an ISBN from Belker and then assign that to the book, and that will work for Ingram. But that means that you have essentially created two separate editions of the same book. It's a bit of a headache. So it's best to just go ahead and buy your ISBNs up front, if bookstores are on your radar at all. So that's the problem that people usually have. The problem that Trina had was that she purchased a package from this partner company, and I'll give some more details in the show notes. And she purchased a package from this partner company that gave her numbers, and it seemed like they couldn't even look them up. So we're not entirely sure what happened there, but be careful. Buy your ISBN. If you're going to buy ISBNs, and if you want to get in bookstores, you should, then buy your ISBNs direct from Belker. If you're not in the U.S., look up the ISBN issuing, the ISBN issuer in your company, in your country. Make sure you figure out who that is and get them direct from them. You might even be lucky. Many countries will issue them for free, but the U.S. makes you pay quite a bit for ISBNs. So just go direct to the source. And don't go through any of the middlemen. It's where you can kind of come up with these problems. Numbers that aren't real numbers. Numbers that are assigned to someone else. Belker also has a lot of leaks on its site. They like to upsell you on a lot of other things. You can get all these other self-publishing packages. You can get... They try to upsell you on barcodes. I'm just going to tell you, you don't need all that. Just get your ISBNs and don't worry about the rest. Print-on-demand publishers can generate barcodes for you. Cover designers can put barcodes on if you ever needed to make a short run, do a short print run. But you don't need all the upsells. Just get the ISBNs direct from the source. That's kind of the lesson here. And again, we'll have some links in the show notes to go to the right place. And that's not always the first place that pops up if you do a search for ISBN or even Bowker ISBN. I can see how people can really go in the wrong place. Google, if I typed in Bowker ISBN, that's the first thing that shows up is it was either the main site, Bowker.com, or My Identifiers, and that's their management site. So it took you right to the source. Bing, however, I did a Bing search, and if you type in Bowker ISBN, you get taken to that same partner publisher site that Trina went to. So it's that's the first thing on the search terms. Of course, Bowker does appear in the search, in the Bing search, but the first thing was the partner site. So don't just click at the top of a search engine, at the top of the search results. Just go right to the source. Links in the show notes. Now, on with the episode, now that the warning has been completed. So welcome to the Book Echoes podcast. Today we have an interview with Trina Wetzel. So welcome, Trina.
Thank you for having me, Connie. Hi, how are you?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Well, we're so glad to have you on the show. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your books?
So, again, I am Trina Wetzel. I am a mother of five children. I have been writing for quite a long time, but I was like a lot of other folks. I was just I would write stuff and then I'd put it away. I worked for the federal government for 20 years, prior military, United States Marine Corps. And my two books were written when my daughter, who is now 24 years old, was 7 years old. And so, Yeah, that's how long these books sat in a file cabinet. And the first book is called Do Bears Eat Pancakes? Mm-hmm. And then it answers that age-old question of whether or not bears really do eat pancakes. And the second one is called Miranda and the Lost Shoe. And it's all about a young girl who uses her imagination throughout everything, and including finding her dad's lost shoe. So,
yeah, so amazing. So you've got two books out. Do you have more planned?
I absolutely do have more planned. I've got, as some people would say, stories out the yin yang, and more stories that have been coming about. My husband and I will actually be working on a collaboration effort of a book called Groundhog Central. And this will be a series of books that will teach and give lessons to children. And I've got a story about a snowman who wants to get out of the snow and go somewhere warm like Florida. But of course, it's a challenge for him. But that's another book that's in the making, so to speak. And typically for me, as I come up with ideas for books, I just note them down. And since we're in the age of iPhones now, I just put notes in my phone whenever they come to me, and no longer have to scribe on a pad.
Yeah, that is definitely a plus about writing in the digital age. Most of us have always got something to write on with us at all times.
Yes. Yes. And so literally used to be at one point I had a pad and a pencil on my nightstand at night. So when I woke up with an idea in the middle of the night, I would just start writing it out and fleshing it out.
Yeah. So definitely a good tip to always have something handy to write on. Yeah. Now,
The books you've got planned and the collaboration with your husband, are those children's are those picture books as well?
They are children's picture books. Let me say this, that I used to work, one of my first jobs was working in the New York Public Library. And though I didn't start off in the children's sections, I ended up working in the children's section, where I developed a love for all the colors and just seeing the excitement on kids' face when they saw a book that had pictures that, you know, kind of took them away. And so that's why my focus is on picture books.
Yeah. It's a very special age, a special time in a reader's life. Those are the books that get kids hooked on reading forever.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit more about your path to publication, because what got you from the point of having those books in a drawer for decades to putting them out into the world?
A very supportive and pushy husband. So he said to me, every time I turn around, I see pads and I see notes and I see typewritten, but that's how old I am, typewritten pages all over the place. Why don't you publish them? Why don't you get one of them out there so you can say you did it? And I was always particular about, I don't know if it's good enough for anyone to read, nonetheless talking about publishing it. And after some conversation with him, he convinced me that it was time for me to start enjoying and putting out there what it is I'd been doing. And that's how it finally came to fruition, was with a little nudging and a little pushing. And I went the self-publishing route. I could have gone the other route and submitted query letters to, you know, publishers. I could have done that. A lot of people do that. And I'm not saying that's not something I would like to do in the future, but I wanted to be able to see some results now. I didn't want to wait because I'd waited so long already. So I opted for the self-publishing route.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the reasons a lot of people choose self-publishing, is because traditional publishing, and especially for illustrated books, it can be a great deal of wait time, for one thing, to find a home for a manuscript, if you even do, and then for the production process, it can be years. And you know, some people don't want to wait that long, or have a really timely topic and can't wait that long.
Right.
Yeah. So would you like to speak a little bit to your experience with that process?
Well, it was definitely a learning process for me with the first book, which made it so much easier when I got to the second one. But for me, it started with just doing some research before I did anything else. I joined a few sites and pages on Facebook for children writers. I wanted to see what everyone else was out there doing first also. So the biggest part and most time consuming part for me was doing my research, you know, on where to start at. The second part for me was then finding an illustrator, because I am not an artist. I started with my son, who is an artist, and I'll honestly tell you that was he's in New York, I'm in Maryland, us trying to get together to make this happen, it just wasn't happening. You know, it was a good idea to keep it all in the family and let's try to work with what we have, but it was not happening the way I wanted to. And I finally decided, okay, why? Just let me hire somebody. Okay. If I pay somebody, they'll be on my time schedule. I won't be on their time schedule. So I ended up on a website called freelancer.com. Not sure if you've heard of it, but they, it's an option for you to hire an illustrator. And the first thing I did is I posted my project. I already had an idea of what I wanted. So I did a rough draft of my book. So along with the pages and Trina's pictures in there. So I had my drawings. So for as much as I could draw, the ideas that I thought should be on that page, you know, what should this look like? I want to see a playground on this page, and I want to see kids on a slide, and I want to see this. And so I had that already planned out when I went on to Freelancer. And I submitted my project for bidding, and there were a lot of people who bid on it. And then it was, for me, it was a process of elimination. Let's look at, you get to go in there and look at the illustrations that they've done. And previously, all their portfolios. And the nice thing is that I was able to easily weed out people who, well, nah, that's too dark. Their characters are too dark. It's not really what I was looking for. And oh, this one, I like this one because, you know, they make the faces round and fluffy. And my characters were all animals. They weren't people. So I needed someone who would be able to bring a realistic look and a softness to young animals for the book. And I ended up finding someone to do that for me. She did a great job with it. We spent a lot of time online going back and forth and back and forth, and she'd give me some ideas of characters, which was really, really great. And then, you know, she sent me the first outline, the first scene. And she'd say, well, what do you think of this? How does this feel for you? Is this what you're looking for? And it was, I want to see more color because I wanted it to be really bright and just to really grab the attention of the children that would be reading this book. And so once we went through that process, she provided to me in an Adobe format, all the scenes and all the pages for the book. My next process for me was to, well, now that you have the book and you have it ready to go, how are you going to self-publish it? Which options are you going to use to self-publish? Oh my God, there are so many out there. So many options. And again, so now I'm back to researching a little more about all the different options. And in the end, I ended up opening up a few of the books, and I'm in the library. And I said, well, let me see where these publishers are going and who they're using to publish their books. And a lot of them were published in China. So I decided, well, hey, why not just go straight to the source?
You mean printed, because and the printed publisher
in China. Yes. Okay. No, I'm sorry. Excuse me for using the wrong term. Yes, printed in China. I'm sorry. And because I did self-publishing. And so I went on to the site Alibaba, and I used that to submit a request for bids out. Based on what I had, and that included, you know, providing to them how many pages, what I was looking for as far, this is, the first one was a board book, you know, so mm-hmm. Not everybody does that kind of work. So again, I was very specific about what I was looking for, the size, I already knew that, and so, after I submitted that, ended up whittling it down, selected a vendor. We worked together and we used Skype to communicate. And of course, you know, there's a time difference there. And so a lot of times I would stay up late so I can work with them so we can get this done. And they were able to get it done in a matter of weeks for me. And that includes shipping it to me here in the States. And I found that there wasn't a vendor here in the States that was as cost effective for me. And that definitely was the most cost effective option for me in publishing and self-publishing the book.
Yeah, that's a really interesting process for a couple of reasons. One, because very few self-published picture books that I've seen are board books, because most self-publishers use print-on-demand services that don't offer board books as an option. So that is one way to get a board book out there.
Yes. And I my idea of wanting to do it as a board book, I'm a new grandmother too. So I had these little people in my life and I wanted to make sure that they would be able to enjoy this book as much as other children would be able to do it. And so it's suitable for infants because it's got the rounded corners, it's a board book, and it's something they'll be able to keep for quite some time. I mean, after they finish chewing on the ends, they'll still be able to read the book, the actual book.
Yeah, it definitely holds up better. And it's something that I really wish a lot of print on demand or short run print services here in the US would offer at a level that's actually kind of doable. Yeah. But
so I after I got everything back in, my I guess the hardest part was trying to figure out, now what do I do about marketing? I've got these books, and my husband's like, oh boy, we're taking up the whole basement with books now, huh? You know, I'm like, you know, because storage is it's one of the reasons people do print on demand, because they don't want to store books. But I figured we had enough room in the basement, or I was going to make some room in the basement for my books. And, but then, like I said, the next step for me was, how was I going to get the word out? How was I going to market my book? And, you know, I did what a lot of other people did. I started with Facebook, friends and family on Facebook. That worked out well. But again, the goal is to sell more and more books. So I looked at, since I am a crafter, and I do a lot of sewing and things like that, I started doing things like, offering, handmade baby blankets with a baby book. You know, I didn't mention, let me tell you this, I also decided at that time that I was going to do a companion giraffe. And so the giraffe is the star of the book, and his name is Georgie. And I also had Georgie made in China for me. So I picked the material. I sent them a picture of him from the book. And they did some mock-ups for me. We did everything via email, nothing via mail at that time. Once they did the sample for me, it was video conferencing for us, so he can show me, you know, what he looked like all the way around, and is this what you were looking for? And it absolutely, he's about 8 inches tall, so he was another option that I use to help with book marketing. And that's probably been more successful than anything else that I've done, because I offer them as a package to folks when I go out to promote the book or just to go to craft shows, I always have the books on display and I offer it, like I said, as a package for folks to buy, and they love it. It's a quick and easy gift for people. And so I'm just trying to get into their head and see, would I buy this? Yeah, I would buy this for a gift. And my market tends to be more so, I've come across a lot of teachers who really like what I've done. They like that this book is a rhyming book and it flows for them. And there aren't a lot of books that rhyme for kids out there. So there are some, but most folks aren't going with the rhyming genre in picture books, and the teachers have really loved it. I've done some story time at daycare centers, at schools, and this has also helped me with marketing my book also.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're taking a page from a lot of traditional publishing packaging options, things like board books, tie-in toys, and making that work as a self-publisher, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you only sell your books direct, or do you have it listed on Amazon or Barnes and Noble?
It's on Amazon. And well, let me say this, that with Do Bears Eat Pancakes, one of the lessons learned for me is in getting the ISBN. One of the things I did not realize at the time is that you can have an ISBN that, yes, you have, it's a legitimate number, but if it's not a particular number, you're not able to sell it to bookstores because it's not really listed. It's really just for self-publishing, you know. And so if you intend just to sell it yourself and not to go to libraries or to Barnes and Nobles and places like that to sell it, then there is this ISBN that you'll use. But if you want to sell it to all those other venues, then you need to make sure you're getting the appropriate ISBN for that. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know that at the time. So that was a lesson learned for me, because my intent all along was to sell it to place it in Barnes and Nobles and in libraries. Mm-hmm. And so that made things a little more difficult for me, but it is on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so I do have that and the electronic version on Amazon.
Yeah. About the ISBN issue, that's really interesting and probably something a lot of listeners would want to watch out for. Did you mean that you use a CreateSpace or a printer provided ISBN instead of going through Bowker to buy an ISBN?
No, I actually went through Bowker. And I went through them, but again, because I said to myself, well, let me just go straight through the source. But again, not understanding that there were different ISBNs for what it is you were trying to do. It was something I learned after I had made a visit to Barnes and Nobles. I walked in and talked to the manager, wanted to talk about placing my book in there. And when they tried to pull it up, they weren't able to see the listing in there using the ISBN I had. And so I got on the phone and I called them and I don't understand. And they said, well, you got one for self-publishers who, you know, again, you can't do this with it. You can't place it in stores like the library can't pull it up if they do that number, because again, there are separate numbers for those who are selling it on your own site or doing self-publishing. So it's just something you really need to look out for, that I learned that you need to look out for.
Okay, that's interesting. And it's something that I'll have to research a little bit more and put in the show notes of this episode. Because I know Bowker does sell a lot of services to self-publishers.
Yes.
Most, if not all of which should be ignored from people's experience.
Yes.
And I believe if you just go through and register yourself as a publisher, like a publisher would, you do get an ISBN that works everywhere. It's never been an issue for me. So I will find that bad spot and point it out for listeners in the show notes so you don't go there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did keep some of my notes. So after we're finished, I'm happy to send
you. Oh, yeah, if you've got a link or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I don't want people to make the same mistake I made. You know, it was like I said, lesson learned. Second time around, it was done very well. You know, didn't make the same mistakes. And it's one of the reasons I think it's so important too for people to don't join different groups. You know, particularly if you're on Facebook, there are hundreds of good sites there for children's authors and illustrators. And they are networking sites. They will help you. People will answer your questions and they'll tell you, hey, this is what I did. This is the problem I had and this is how I solved it. And, you know, again, when you're new and it's the first time you're doing it, you don't know what questions to ask. You know, so reading through and seeing what someone else has done and what mistakes they've done, it's invaluable to you as a new author.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many resources out there, especially on social media, and people are really generous with their time and their knowledge. So go out and find those. Well, I think we've kind of reached the end of my questions for you, and we've dug up some really interesting stuff. Do you have any parting thoughts you'd like to share with listeners?
Well, the one thing that I want to say is it's never too late to be who you want to be. It's not. And part-time, full-time, whatever time you want to spend doing it, just do it. You know? Enjoy it and enjoy the ride, and you know, just do it. Okay, that's it.
Yep. That's great. Just do it. All right, well, thank you so much, Trina. Finally, where can we find you and your books online?
Okay, I am at sweetpollyscreations.com online, and you can find me on at the same link on Facebook and on Amazon also, Sweet Polly's Creations. We also have a page there where you'll find my books listed at any of those three places.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Connie, for having me.
Thanks again for listening to the Book Echoes podcast. If you have enjoyed today's episode, I'd love to hear from you in the show notes at bookechoes.com/show. That's where you'll find the show notes and the back episodes for all of the podcasts. And I'd love to hear from you there, or if you'd like to leave a rating or review, you can find us at Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and everywhere else you are getting your podcasts. So have a great one. Till next time.